This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris. This is a live recording we did on December 18th of our TNG Economic Update newsletter. It's typically only part of our VIP subscription, but to celebrate our upcoming market timing report, California Real Estate on Borrowed Time, coming up January 26th, we decided to open it up to our entire network. You can watch and listen to the entire thing uncut at thenorrisgroup.com/TikTok, where you also find information about the event coming up on January 26th.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and our special guest today is me. We're just doing the solo, the newsletter review. I've been a real estate investor or homeowner during three bull markets in California, and they're a lot of fun. And we're about to wind down another one. The first one I got to enjoy was when I first owned a home, and my little home in Mira Loma went up like a rocket, and I bought three other homes, and they all doubled, and I thought I was just a real estate genius, and had the same experience between 85 and 89, and then the 97 to 2006 was ridiculous. So we're coming at the end of another one at 2018. Just prices just came out from CAR, median price at 554 right now. And that's about a full 7% decline from the peak of where we were about 5 months ago. So we have been getting a lot of calls from investors that are really concerned. And one of the things that I want to talk about in this newsletter was about investing out of state, because there's serious consideration about exiting some of the properties that people have. And actually, it should be considered. I've met with two people that have pretty major inventories, and I would say half of it they should not own for the duration of a flat or down market. Bad locations, lousy inventory, not going to win any tiebreakers during that cycle at all. And so that's really the reasoning behind what I wanted to write. As an investor, I left California four or five times, and every time it was for a different reason. Sometimes it was take advantage of opportunity, and one time it was just to land safely in a different place to hold inventory, because my desire had changed from what it was to, you know, what I now want to do. So we'll talk about my first experiences, Grand Junction, Colorado. I mean, I'm 32 years old, and I don't know that I had any business going out of state buying a bunch of properties. Seemed like a good opportunity. My friend Marty, his dad moved to Grand Junction, was a realtor, and that's how I heard about it. Every once in a while, I'd ask Marty how his dad was doing. And he said, oh, he's doing great. Real estate in Grand Junction is just going great. And then a couple of years later, I asked, and he says, oh my gosh, you know, and he knew what I did. He said, you ought to go to Grand Junction, because it just got devastated and prices are way down. I didn't really pay attention to it, but a year later, I asked how his dad was doing, and it was even worse. And so put my buying hat on and went to Grand Junction, Colorado, ran an ad that I bought houses, an ad that would have gotten 50 calls a month in California, got about 50 calls a day in Grand Junction. It scared me to death. Obviously, it was a very tough area to buy in. Prices were descending. I told the realtor I'm going to go back home, that I wasn't going to buy anything on that trip. I had to figure out where they were. And so I waited. I told him, you're not done going down. And so I would wait to buy something after I calculated where bottom was. So probably in about a year is when we made an offer to HUD. And we negotiated over 7 months and ended up with a $40,000 purchase price of something that had once sold for $200,000. I remember, actually, there was a stack. Each of the files, of course, was about 3 inches thick. And there was a stack that was very tall next to me as I started to sign. And it dawned on me, my life is never going to be the same. And never was too long. But for the next 5 years, it was not the same. So here are some lessons I learned going to Grand Junction, Colorado. one of the most important things was leave your California brain at home. I'm looking at four-year-old condos I'm buying for 10 grand. That obviously has to be a steal, right? Well, it just depends. It sounds like the steal of a lifetime. One of the things that I thought for sure is that I don't really care if I can't sell them right away, but I knew I would be able to rent them because renting was so easy in California. Well, that was flawed thinking. This was Grand Junction, Colorado. The whole town was 50% vacant. What did I own? Did I own a single family home that would win any tiebreakers? Nope. Owned a fourplex, a little bit of a remote area, not the best, where most fourplexes are actually located. And we stayed 50% vacant for 2 years. And I realized that probably half of the people wouldn't even have come to the area just up based on the inventory and location. So I had miscalculated how easy it would be to rent. So if you're buying out of area, out of state, make sure you have inventory that wins a tiebreaker. That's lesson number one. Make sure you have a team in place, or you can adopt an established team of someone that you trust. Before I bought anything in Grand Junction, I made 7 trips. I literally door knocked every property manager, every realtor, and interviewed them and picked the team before I bought anything. And that was a lifesaver because I needed them. It was a big deal. Mary Simpson, I mean, gosh, how long is this? And I still remember her name. She bailed my butt out a few times just because she was good enough at what she did. And she stayed in the business the whole time. Right now, I own stuff in Florida. And one of the questions I asked the person that's managing the homes that I have in Leesburg, he's a pretty young guy. And I'm saying, why are you property managing? I thought maybe it was sort of a stopgap until other things worked. And he says, I'm very interested in property management because I'm interested in owning pilot rentals myself. And I was kind of made me think of Mike O'Neill, who I work out with all the time. That's exactly why he did it. So he could manage his own inventory and started a business on the side. So just make sure you take the time to build a team that you're comfortable with, because everything from a distance is more difficult. Repairs, vacancies, you have to have people you trust. So that's imperative. Be careful of an area dominated by one employer. So Grand Junction, Colorado was dominated by oil shale. That's why it grew. And all the fourplexes that were built were housing people that were really basically going to the shale mines. When oil shale closed, there was no reason for those to be occupied. And so it just became vacant. Those fourplexes, again, went down by 80%. You had thousands of people leave. The mood of the area was depression. Can you imagine owning a $200,000 fourplex next door, and now you're going to get 40 grand for it? That's why there were 50 calls a day. There were people offering me 10 grand to take over their loan. That was the first time I ever heard anything like that, because I was used to California calls. And why that was is, Colorado had deficiency judgment, so they could chase the people and stick them with the bill. So that was an interesting lesson. The other thing I had to realize, that there was a difference in what Grand Junction renters would do versus California. When we drive 10 miles in California, we don't think that's a big deal. So I was 10 miles from a major college. I thought, piece of cake, we'll rent it to college students. I remember Mary Simpson looking at me going, you expect college students to ride their bike 10 miles in the snow? And I just, no, I didn't think about it that way. Don't they have cars? So I missed out on that one. And we didn't rent them to college students and or to many other people, as a matter of fact. Just to give you a little bit of an anecdote there. I was still pretty cocky about, I'm sure I can fill those homes. I'm thinking I picked the wrong person. So I literally went there, ran a big block ad, 6 inches by 8 inches in the paper. I asked Mary Simpson, give me a lot of applications. She kind of smiled. She says, how many you think you'll need? I said, give me 2 dozen. And Went to Hilton Hotel, sat there, responded to phone calls that never happened. My phone never rang with an ad that was in the Sunday and Saturday paper. Never rang one time. I went home Sunday night and went, wow, Mary, you're doing a great job keeping us even. So that was my experience. After 2 years, the economy started to recover and they got filled up. But those are the lessons learned in Grand Junction. And I think about that whenever I'm going to somewhere else I don't know. I think about what I learned in Grand Junction, Colorado. I had another experience about 10 years later in Miami. Alex Navarro, my best buddy, moved there from California, and he lived in Miami, and Hurricane Andrew hit. 30 days after the hurricane hit, he had been running an ad the whole time that he was buying houses for cash, and suddenly his phone started ringing off the hook. People had gotten their insurance check settlements for about 80% of the value of the property, and they wanted to come and get cashed out by him at 20% of value. So he went to see some of the homes, and they visually looked really bad. And what happens in a hurricane is everybody is overworked. Every insurance adjuster in the state is slammed. Probably lots of inexperienced people are looking at properties they shouldn't be looking at. Building departments are slammed. And for safety reasons, they red tag everything in sight to try and make sure they don't get sued or they keep it safe for everybody. So that was basically what happened in the 30-day period prior to me getting a call from Alex. Alex calls me up and he says, I'm getting some really strange phone calls. I'm getting calls from people that want to sell me their home that's, say, worth $200,000 for $40,000, and they got their insurance check. But I see these properties. I don't think it's structural damage. I think it's just a mess. And so I flew there, and to make a long story short, I concluded that he was correct. And I started thinking about what was going on that was repetitive. And number one thing is insurance companies completely overpay for hurricane damage. They're just pushed to the limit time-wise. They're dealing with probably things that they don't always see and maybe very inexperienced people looking at it. So to be in a hurricane state in Florida as an investor, I have to say that I'm not afraid of it. I think that it creates opportunity. And if there's an insurance company involved, I think it's a profitable event. Second thing I learned is to make sure that you have your own crew available to repair the properties should that event occur. And that was really critical. You can imagine something like 60,000 homes were destroyed in Miami and surrounding area, 100,000 houses damaged. There's no way you had contractors sufficient. So you asked for a roof estimate. First of all, it was through the roof and it was not going to get done in any timely manner. So we flew a crew in from California to get the work done because I was repairing stuff in California on a regular basis. So that's kind of how we handle that. So whenever I'm involved in an area, and a lot of times it's through the property management company where you have a priority, we've already had that discussion that if we have an event that we have a priority, we've just made an arrangement to deal with a pretty regional builder. And that was one of the conversations was in the event that we have a big hurricane, you know, what's going to be our procedure. So just make sure you have access to people that can repair your properties. And so you don't have to stand in line and wait for something to occur. The third thing I realized is that there was a very big difference in the damage of certain types of homes. I drove around and I would pass by a neighborhood that seemed pretty untouched. Yeah, roof damage, but structurally everything seemed pretty good. I'd go a mile away, even newer homes, pretty tore up. What was the difference? One was block, one was framed. And then I drove a little further and I'd pass by what looked like systematic piles of trash. And then I get to the corner and it was a mobile home park, or it used to be a mobile home park. Mobile homes that were probably, you know, built in the 60s, not even to HUD standard, they were destroyed. So it's really important that if you're going to own rental somewhere and you're going to face hurricane, make sure you have the kind of inventory that stands up. Make it so, make sure it's block. And also the newer standards, they just came out with newer standards. So brand new homes have to get built with to a very different standard. The homes that we're currently building in Florida have 160 mile an hour ability to take the hurricane at 160 miles an hour. So I think they'll probably do very well. I had a hurricane hit Leesburg, and when Leesburg got a hurricane, that was unusual for one thing. It's sort of in the middle of the state. It had a hurricane go right over the 20 houses that it had at the time. And we had a total of $5,000 damage in 20 houses. That kind of made me feel pretty safe. The one example I wanted to use about the Florida investment that happened in Leesburg is, you know, I had to think about where I was in California. It was pretty early. It was a couple of years ago. I knew it wasn't peaked out in price. But what I owned wasn't something I wanted to own forever. That I knew. And I knew a transition to something else would take time. So year was 2016. And I was fortunate, you know, during the downturn, we paid $64,000 to $80,000 for this inventory. It was now worth $275,000. And it was a marginal area. I was always trying to never have a vacancy there. So I fixed the properties really well. We granted in the bathrooms and the kitchens. We fixed them just as we would have fixed a flip and rented it. Never chased rents because I just didn't want to have a vacancy there. So I probably missed out on money there, but I certainly had the same tenant for years, and I didn't have much of a repair bill on any of the homes that I sold. So these sold for about $275,000, and I had a chance to have Alex build me some homes in Leesburg, Florida. And basically this is what the numbers were. We went from two houses in Moreno Valley for $275,000 a piece and ended up with three homes in Leesburg that were worth about $190,000. So the numbers for went from two houses to three houses. The rents went from $2,400 to $4,000. I went from inventory that probably 80% of the people in Moreno Valley would have passed on the area, and to a home that's very desirable where no one would pass on it. So that's what I'm excited about in the transition that is occurring for me. I love the fact that I have this inventory, and I'm looking forward to having more of it. And we just made a major deal with a regional builder to build some homes for us. So I'm very excited that we've got that opportunity. And in January, we're going to share that opportunity with the people that come to the timing event. And possibly you guys can get involved with your own inventory as well. I guess that's it for the out of the state. The numbers in California. So I mentioned the median price number just came out. Median price California is $554,000. And that's a significant hit compared to, you know, where we were at about 600,000. So we're minus 7%. And there's a lot of concern. We just spoke in San Diego. And I mean, that audience was basically saying it's over and their flips aren't making money and all that. So for the January event, we'll talk about specifics. I've decided to look at very specific numbers for certain areas. So I bought a newsletter in Orange County so I can take a look at the inventory that's available. One of the things I noticed is that when you use overall numbers instead of drilling down, it's very hard to talk about counties very accurately. So, and yet I found that systemic numbers, state numbers, are more important than local numbers as far as saying this is really going to be a bad time or a great time. So, but I can understand if you own the wrong inventory. In Orange County, the gentleman's letter that I looked at, he was very good at breaking down the amounts of inventory that was available and the time on the market for certain price ranges. So if you have an Orange County home at, say, under $600,000, you had a very reasonable marketing time, 20 days or something like that. If it was over $3 million, it was a year and a half. I mean, you have to know that kind of stuff. So it's one thing to say, well, the median time on market for Orange County is 4 months. Well, it kind of depends. and that's what the inventory, you know, whatever inventory you have, that's what's going on in San Diego as well. We met with concerned investors, and I just looked at one of the car reports. As they speak in different areas, they have very specific information for the area. And so you had maybe a 70% growth in the inventory for sale in a price range of between $500,000 and $600,000. I'm being sort of generic right now, but that's what's occurred. And if that's where you're flipping inventory is, that's why you're feeling the impact. Why isn't my stuff selling? Well, you just had a 70% increase in the inventory for sale in that particular price range. Well, that's pretty unusual. So we're not trying to drill down in the report in January 26. I'm going to mention some of these things. But the report for January is basically going to take a look at the overall picture and say, okay, I think we're in for a different ride than I thought, and I think we're going to have to deal with some price damage before we head in the other direction. And what's going to be interesting about that is it will facilitate opportunity to exit at very near a peak and maybe move your money somewhere else. When I met with those investors that had pretty good size inventories, if I were sitting in their seat, I would be selling half of it and moving the equity somewhere else for a safer ride and just better inventory. Because having inventory that's marginal, like I did in Moreno Valley in a downturn, is not pleasant. And if it gets vacant, it can get hammered. And so I think a lot of people own that type of inventory. So we'll go over some of the numbers. This is from the October numbers. Orange County, the median price right now is $810,000 as far as in October. We paired it with an interest rate of, I think, 5%. Is that accurate, Aaron? So 5% interest rate. So the payment is $3,479. And if you go to a 5%, and we're trying to compare it to the peak of last time, we think there's still an 11.9% upside at a 5% interest rate. Interest rates are real important to the future of California right now, as far as having the math work and how far we can go either up or down. Riverside, we're now at 400,000 median. Now, what's interesting about that is you have an FHA loan limit that just went from 405 to something like 430 and change. So that'll help Riverside. That'll help the lower prices go up for a while. If we have a 5% interest rate and get to the same monthly payment, the ratio, then we still have a 24% upside if everything's being equal in Riverside. So we have a lot more room in Orange County than Orange County. Sacramento, very similar to Riverside. Really, right now they're at 360,000 with a capacity to go to 477. That's a 32% spread. I haven't spoken anywhere in the last 6 months that hasn't been concerned, I might mention. So that's one of the things that this report has to deal with, is that are these numbers kind of similar in pattern? Because what I just did this morning, I took a look at peaks and valleys in each year, and we have very similar peaks and valleys. So now I've got to go back to the 90s when we had a downturn between 90 and 97 and see how that differentiated. But we always, inside of a year, have fluctuations. I want to see how that changes when we actually have a downturn and see if we can say, okay, this is actually the beginning of a downturn, or it's business as usual. It just changed timing a few months. I think that would be an important consideration. San Bernardino has a $289,000 median price right now. They have potentially a lot of upside, 37.9%. What's interesting about all of these areas is that they don't have a ton of new building going on. So even with this upside that's supposed to be locked and loaded in place numerically, you still don't have builders really excited about building product there.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.